Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Thank you so much for coming. Pure Dog Talk is happy to be invited to the Copper Classic and the Saturday Symposium. Our topic this evening is mentoring the future, and we are very excited to have some of the future here with us. Hi, Julia. Hi, Kyle. Hi, young people. And I think it's very important that we acknowledge the young exhibitors, the young breeders-to-be, the young handlers, the people that are coming up that are really going to continue the sport forward. And that's what we're talking about tonight, is we're talking about how do we do that? What are the opportunities that we have? Where can we reach out? How can we reach out and affect good, positive future plans? You guys in the audience, our judges here this evening, number one rule, you may not discuss any dog under judgment this weekend. Everything else, ask. This is your opportunity to get to hear from the judges. Don't go on Facebook and read it on a chat room. Talk to people. This is cool, right? Talk to people. What concept? Judges were not hatched from eggs. Judges have knowledge. I want to do a quick thing. This dog show this weekend is dedicated to a man by the name of Ron Smith. Ron Smith was a brand new guy to dogs. He was an older fellow. He had a couple Spinonis. He so desperately wanted to learn. He was the first person who signed up for this seminar. Ron passed away a couple weeks ago, and he is not here. So I really want you all, every single person here, every single person on Facebook Live, to think about that. That the 60-year-old guy and his Spinonis, and he didn't know anything, and he just wanted to learn. If we all have that as our goal, the sport will never die. So be like Ron, guys. And one of the things I'd really like for you guys all to take note of when I say judges were not hatched from an egg and we really are their dog people, our judge that's joined us this evening, Joyce Bannock, has brought her dogs with her. So a round of applause for judges who actually like dogs. Okay, so our judges this evening, I'd like to introduce Joyce Bannock, Cindy Vogels, the audience, and John Wade. Way in the audience. All right, I am now going to pass off the microphone. Each of our judges is going to give us the 411, as we like to say. A little bit of your background in dogs, what brought you here today, breeder, judge, exhibitor, former AKC field rep, whatever it is. And we're going to start with you, Joyce, and your doggies.
So, my first dog show was actually, I did obedience. And that was with an old English sheepdog. That's sort of first. But anyway, I had miniature schnauzers that other people showed and various other breeds. But I really focused on the confirmation with old English sheepdog and also performance herding events. Then I also had Portuguese water dogs. I do a lot of performance and confirmation. And I've been judging since 1993.
Can't hardly believe I can say that. Joyce and I are also both from Denver, so we have a corner on the geographic market. I started in dogs in 68. Well, I had a poodle growing up, kind of over my father's dead body. Not literally, because he's actually 98 years old. And a lot of you know my mother. My mother and I had to find a dog when my poodle died that my father would put up with, and so we ended up with a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier. And they were still in miscellaneous at the time, and we were all encouraged to show. Actually, it was kind of funny. Give your dog a bath and take it to the dog show, as if that was all it entailed. So the book bit us, really. My mother was really instrumental in getting the South Dakota Wheaton recognized as a breed eligible for championship points, in other words, out of miscellaneous. And I've had a number of other breeds besides that, quite a number of terrier breeds, and also bred some Brittany's, and we've had Greyhounds, and we haven't been without a Pekingese in a very long time. I decided to judge in the early 90s, and presently a group for the sporting group, the Terrier group, Toys, and Half of the Hounds. On that happy note, pass you over to the real hound guy.
My name's John Wade. I bought my mother a dachshund for Mother's Day in the late 50s. Went to my first dog show at Louisville, Kentucky in 1960. Worked for a professional handler, was a professional handler for a while, then got into business, and always had dachshunds, still have dachshunds. Had some smooth fox terriers for a while. Dachshunds and fox terriers don't like each other. That was my start. Worked for the American Kennel Club twice, started judging, and now approved for six groups and a couple sporting breeds.
Excellent.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. So our topic this evening, as I mentioned, is mentoring the future. So I would like for each of you to speak briefly to this about your mentors, what they taught you, that thing that stayed with you. And then I'd like for us to ask questions. And I'd like for us to think about ways that we can mentor people in this sport, whether we are old people that have been at it for a long time, whether we are young people who are just getting started. How do we keep this sport going? We know what the problems are. We're not having a kvetch session here, okay? We know what the problem is. Let's talk about what we can do. Joyce, I'm starting with you again, dear.
Since I really started in performance, and by the way, I judge herding, working in most of the sporting breeds as well, and I just became a field trial judge too.
Awesome.
Bassets and eagles.
Excellent.
And so, being an outdoors person, I used to show horses. That was the beginning of this whole thing. When I was not able to show horses because of lack of a trailer, I wound up losing the trailer. I wound up showing dogs. And a lot of what I did at the beginning was just a continuation of wanting to compete in some manner. And I went to different people, and I had great people who would show me how, starting with Old English, not the easiest breed to go into the ring for the first time with, of how to groom the dogs and being having people who were available to me. And I think that's really critical at this point of people mentoring and being available to our next generation. That's what's going to continue the sport and keep your mind and heart open and to encourage people in that regard. Young ones, even the older ones. There's some older ones that
right,
need to be encouraged.
Right,
as
and
well.
I think one of the things that I think is fascinating. We look at our stats, we talk to people. Some of the people coming into the sport, some of the first timers coming into the sport are late 40s, early 50s, empty nest families who finally have the money and the time to do this. And I have people call me at Pure Dog Talk or email me and say, how can I be an assistant? And I'm thinking, honey, I would love for you to be an assistant. We need to remember it's not just our juniors. And I want to mention that the Copper Classic, this event this evening, is a fundraiser for their scholarship for the juniors. So I think that's pretty amazing. But it's all ages. It's not just young people. It's all ages and all areas of people.
Laura, you and I have talked about the fact that we're the second generation. And I think that the reason why I'm still in this today is that my mother and I did it together for so many years. And to tell you the truth, we probably would not have been nearly as close as we are now if it hadn't been for dogs. That was really the common bond that nurtured our relationship. And having said that, my only child, while loves his purebred dogs, the first thing he has done is has them neutered, and he has absolutely no interest in having them shown. Both of the purebred dogs that he's had since going out on his own have been very finishable, but it was the furthest thing from his mind. And so perhaps maybe we should be looking at not just nurturing juniors, but how can you bring somebody along, somebody in your life, who can you introduce this passion to? where it might stick.
Absolutely. John?
That's an interesting point. And to continue on that, while I'm a second generation, my parents showed dogs after I got my mother the dachshund, and they supported my habit, so to speak. And as a judge, if I have an opportunity, and I know I have a novice in the ring, I try to talk to him, I try to help him. Case in point, there was a gentleman with a harrier, maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago. I don't think he knew what he had. I placed the dog fourth in the group, had somebody help him get a lead. He now has multiple group placements. He is highly ranked in the NOHS series. And those kind of things, we don't see enough of that. We all need to be aware of new people in the sport that we can help. Whether it's just saying, can I help you show your dog or help you learn how to show your dog, get the right lead, encourage them. Don't discourage them. Don't tell them how ugly their dog is. Try to help them. Try to encourage them so that they're here tomorrow. Maybe the dog they have right now isn't show quality, but they would like to continue in the sport. Please try to help them, because without that, it makes it a difficult task.
John makes a really good point. It's something we can all do. Every single one of us here, whether we've been at this for 40 years or 4 minutes, we can encourage someone, we can smile at somebody. This is not always the easiest game to play. There can be some rough edges. So helping people, encouraging, hold a door open. Just be nice. Say congratulations. And I think those kinds of things are really, really useful. So questions from the audience. Who wants to start? Bold and brave, raise your hand.
Start with Kyle.
All right, Kyle, what's your question for the judges this evening? Okay, he typed it. He wrote this out for you guys. Okay, this is a very prepared young individual. Are you ready? All right, here you go.
When you first come into the ring, what do you look for in your dog?
Question is, when the handler, the exhibitor first comes in the ring, what's the first thing that catches your eye about the dog?
You're at the start of the line, man.
I guess. That's what you get for walking your dogs.
That's right. That's what I get for dog care.
The overall presence of the handler and the dog, just how relaxed or not relaxed the person can be just to see and the dog. And the goal is also to make sure everybody's relaxed and they have the time, within reason, to get the dog and themselves settled in the ring. That's what I look for.
I guess the first thing that I look for in every breed is, does the dog have the correct silhouette? Because in my book, if it doesn't have the correct outline, it can't be correct. After that, it's a matter of weighing things back and forth, but every breed really has its stamp in its silhouette, and for me, that's paramount.
There's not a lot to add to that. I mean, those are the highlights, the points. Does it look like it's Otter hound? Does it look like it's a bloodhound? And the look is different in different breeds, and judges need to recognize that.
Absolutely. Okay, did you have a follow-up, Cindy?
Total different follow-up. Just because I'm getting senile, so I probably will forget to, if I don't get it right out now, I'll probably forget to say it. And initially, we were going to talk about things that we can do to promote juniors at dog shows, and Johnny has really devoted himself to this. And I do want to run a second idea that I just read about this morning, and I was talking to Johnny about it earlier, and that is apparently there is now some kind of a program encouraging kids to be apprentice stewards, and it sounded like a great idea to me. Johnny's going to talk about Pee-wees, which is a different program. And I think, though, by us talking about these programs, perhaps we can get the word out. When we were sitting at the group ring tonight, there were any number of judges that had never heard of the Pee-wee program. And, you know, this is something that every show chair needs to hear about and be really encouraged to make a part of their show. The Pee-wee program, I had heard about. This stewarding one, I hadn't. So I think that meetings like this, we all can take this forward to all the clubs we belong to and encourage the show chairs to incorporate those things into their show.
Jody?
I have a very special interest in juniors and have had for many years. My question is, what can we do to encourage clubs to offer junior showmanship, to support and mentor the juniors coming up in their breeds. Obviously, all breed clubs are required to have junior showmanship, but I am amazed and somewhat disheartened.
They're actually not required.
Most of them do. Thank you. But I'm more amazed and disheartened by the number of specialties that don't offer junior showmanship. If we're talking about supporting young people, how can you as breeders, how can breeders, as we as breeder, not do this? And some clubs are fantastic. Some of them have no interest. My question is, how can we as a group become more vocal and encourage our breed clubs to make this commitment? I have one good example, which is I have a young junior who shows an English Toy Spaniel. And we contacted the National Breed Club because I require all of my juniors to join their National Breed Club because that's part of being in dogs. So I said, can we get a junior application? And they said, we haven't had a junior for 15 years showing an English Toy Spaniel. And I said, okay, and your national specialty is being held when? And the juniors, and they said, oh, we haven't offered junior showmanship for at least 10 years. When was the last time we offered junior showmanship? And that club, because of this one young woman, number one, developed a junior membership, and more importantly than that, offered it at their club, and now offers it at all their regional shows. And she may be the only junior there, but she went to her national, and she showed every day at that national with her dog. And people took the time, once she was there with them, to help her with grooming tips and give her feedback. And it began a mentoring process for a child that nobody in the breed knew, and now they've taken her on. And my question is, how can we as members of clubs, as breeders, do this on a much more global level?
Okay, there you go. John, I'm going to start this one with you.
Well, it is one.
The parent club I belong to has a junior program, but I think it is lacking in a lot of areas. I would encourage the all breed clubs not to charge for junior showmanship.
Exactly. Yep.
Make it a free class.
Yep.
Also, when you get a judge for junior showmanship, try to get somebody that used to be a junior or started out. They're out there. They're available to be hired, and your entries will increase. May not be the first year, but if you continue that program, it will grow and prosper.
And the other thing that we've started doing, this is the second year that we've had a best of the best juniors competition.
At
the end of the weekend.
That was very fun.
So it's the winner of junior showmanship at the group shows and at any of the associated specialties, plus the two all breed shows. And we have had professional handlers. Last year it was four, this year it was three, actually do the judging of it. And it's the last thing before best in show on Sunday. And it's gone over really well. They get a really beautiful big rosette. However, we also give them a very generous cash gift. And my Albright Club, Evergreen Colorado
this Cattle Club,
and this year was a $250 Amazon cart for best and $100 for reserve. So the kids really wanted to win it.
No kidding.
Yes.
We do a best of the best on Monday, and I'm actually judging it. I'm an ex-junior and a junior's judge. So the thing we do is we do a $750 travel voucher for the garden or Eukanuba. We don't hand them cash. We don't hand them a check and say, do with what you will. We make it useful towards future shows for them. Now, they can use it 2 years down the road. They can use it this year. They can use it next year. We don't make them use it. You know, a novice junior could win that, and they won't be ready to go to the garden in for 5 years.
Yeah.
So we don't make them do that. We hold it for them. We also offer a bike and a rosette.
And last year's winner was one of my kids, and she's using the $500 to make her first trip to Westminster this year.
Yeah.
And that, okay, so Jody's comment there was that last year's winner of this exact scholarship, which, P.S., this is a fundraiser for, okay, is using her $500 scholarship to go to the garden in 2000.
First time.
18 for the very first time. So that's a pretty big deal. And I think these are great ideas. Linda, I'm going to pass you the mic, Kenny. PHA also does that. Every year from each zone, we give money out to a junior to make a trip to the garden if they qualify. So we send 7 of them to the garden.
What's the criteria?
It's each zone kind of sets up their own criteria. Like in California, what I used to do is when Bruce was ahead, it was the number one junior for that year in California. Well, there's no one that does those stats anymore, so it's really hard to do it. So what I've done, since now I'm one of the few PHAs out in California, but what I have done with the money that all of us raise is I watch the juniors, and all the PHA members give me suggestions. And if there's a junior that has helped the handlers or gone out of their way to help other juniors or needs the money, that's the ones that we give to. I don't know. How do you guys?
Dinah's in charge of that.
I'm going to be completely honest.
I think she does the same thing.
She's basically a need-based. And Linda and I both do the juniors clothing swap. We have donations from the fans. This is through PHA.
Like you do.
Yeah, you do it here.
Yep, they do it here. We do it through PHA. I know you guys are doing it here this weekend, right? Mm-hmm. Excellent. And you get donations of clothing from the fancy, and the children are able to choose an outfit. And keep in mind, these aren't all kids that come from super rich families and wear Coco Chanel.
Oh, right? And they love it.
And they grow. I mean, look at this thing. Yeah, she grows. Look at
that one. Stand up.
Yeah, this one definitely grows. Yeah. It grows.
So, right? Vinny, the main thing we need for that is we need boys' clothing.
Yeah, boys' clothes. Anybody wants to do any boys' clothes? Then we sell, Linda and I both do this. I don't know if you guys do this here, but it's been really useful for us. We sell the extra clothing that the juniors don't take, and we use that to raise money for the scholarship.
We usually make about $500-$600.
Today, any junior can come and get as much as they want.
I don't have a limit.
I don't either.
Tomorrow, I have an entire house taken over by us.
Yeah, us too.
Juniors can come any time and get free. Any of you want to come out and go shopping because I've got some unbelievable suits, it's $5 a piece.
Exactly.
$5 for a blouse.
Yep.
$10 for a full suit.
Awesome. I'm going shopping.
At Del Valle last year, we had St. John suits.
Yeah. Someone donated St. John suits.
Hey, listeners, join me for a minute. We're going to go talk to Cheryl Kreitzer from showdogswithaz.org. And Cheryl has some really, really pertinent information to share with you guys on this brand new resource she's created.
Yes, thank you, Laura. Well, showdogs.org is one of those babies that I've been working on for a while. And what it's meant to do is bring the entire worldwide purebred dog population and exhibitors and breeders, owners, juniors, everybody together in one place. And one of the things that we have to do is come together in that one place, because with Google being one of those places where someone searches a breed and the most hit on golden site is going to be a golden doodle site, well, they're going to go there. We want the people to go where the best purebred dogs are and find the right people to help them go forward, which is going to help our sport. So if everybody gets involved, even does a $5 litter announcement or a $10 winner's gallery post or a breeder's ad, you know, there's handlers, breeders, judges, it doesn't matter what you do, come on and chat, help answer questions for people. That's what's going to give us the relevant figures we need for Google to say, hey, you're looking for a dog, you're going to come here first.
Awesome. That is so wonderful. Thank you so much, Cheryl. Listeners, go check it out, would you? Showdogswithaz.org. And we are back to our podcast.
Next questions. We need to have more audience questions out here.
What is your pet peeve that exhibitors do in the ring?
Pet peeve, judges.
I don't really have one because I tend to be fairly lenient. But I think that one thing that is troublesome and worrisome, because it eats into the time, is when people either don't say, I have another dog in the next class, or they go out and don't bother to come back for a while. So if I had a pet peeve, it would be that. Not coming back into the ring when we need you, and you're holding up everybody else.
I'm kind of with you. I don't consider really that I have any particular pet peeve. I suppose throwing bait all over the ring and not picking it up, it's just really, I mean, that's not a pet peeve. It's just plain old disgusting.
Yeah.
And I think probably most judges feel the same way as I do. We all like to be friendly. We like people to like us. We like people. We wouldn't be doing this if we didn't love both people and dogs. But there's a time for idle chit-chat, and it's not in the ring. You have very, very little time to go over a dog. And if the exhibitor is yammering in your ear, and usually it has nothing to do with the dogs, it's just taking time away from your dog and breaking my concentration, what little there is of it. So, you know, that it's not that we don't want to be friendly. Most of the time we're just concentrating on what we're supposed to be doing, that's all. Come catch us some other time to talk.
Being grateful for the stewards. There's not enough courtesy extended to a lot of the stewards, politeness. We can't do our job without having somebody helping us out, getting the dogs into the ring. You guys all know this. And being courteous, most of them are volunteers, or on a very low pay scale.
Yeah, very minimal budget.
And then the other thing is cleaning up after your dog if it does something in the ring and not expecting the steward or the judge to do it.
pretty sure that's not in the job description.
Yeah.
No. Okay, Julia, I knew that she was working on a question earlier. So just spit the sucker out. All right, here you go.
What's the hardest thing about being a judge?
What's the hardest thing about being a judge?
That's from Julia, age
nine.
Who's just started a junior showmanship and showed her pug dog in the breed before that so she could practice.
What's the hardest thing about being a judge? Travel.
TSA.
TSA. I think the most difficult thing is when somebody has a good dog and they don't know how to present it, and it makes it very challenging, or they have a good dog that you can't examine. And like I said before, I'm very lenient in that regard, and it shortchanges the dog and the individual.
I've been asked this question a number of times in the past few months, so I've got my answer ready, and truly for me, and again, getting back to the point that we may look austere in the ring and we may appear to be unapproachable, and there are times we probably are unapproachable, but I think that we realize that each one of you loves your dog, and it really is painful. We get to please very, very few people by the end of the day, and it's hard because we know that we're disappointing most of the people that walk into our ring.
That's a great
answer. And Julie, again, five dogs, four ribbons.
Yes.
That is a very hard part. Five dogs, four ribbons. That's a very hard part of being a judge. Okay, Anna, did you have something?
I have a good five dogs, four ribbons story. This is a junior story, so it serves two purposes on this. Years ago, I walk into the novice juniors, and I think this was just when they lowered the age. And there, I didn't count the kids, needless to say, because here comes this little girl with a borzoi, and she is bawling. I mean, she's walking into the ring crying, and she's tiny. She can no more control this dog than the man in the moon. So I look at this, and I think, oh my, what are we going to do now? I have this tiny child with this out-of-control borzoi, and she's crying already. So I see a relative of hers outside the ring, and it was in Denver, so I actually knew. I didn't know the kid at all, but I could put, unfortunately, the two and two together here. And so finally I went outside the ring, and I said, okay, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to excuse her? She's obviously miserable, and she's having trouble. What do you want me to do? I said, oh, please don't excuse her. Don't excuse her. I said, okay. So then you start holding this child's hand. And I will say that this truly probably was to the detriment of the other four kids in this class. And I didn't realize there were five until I went to pass out the ribbons. And so, of course, you know which kid isn't going to get a ribbon either. So it was a really unpleasant situation. However, by the end of this, the child had stopped crying. And I do believe, I have a feeling that this kid stuck with it. I just have a feeling that she did. But, you know, you talk about having to make lemonade out of lemons with five kids in a four ribbon class. You know, I ended up giving her candy instead.
Cindy, I think that's great. Juniors, judges who appreciate the juniors.
Yes.
Here you go, Johnny.
You can have participation ribbons for those juniors in there that don't get ribbons. That's up to the club, but that is one option that some people can do.
Years ago we did, and we did at Evergreen, and we don't anymore, but that's a really good idea, Johnny.
Yeah, you can do that for participation ribbons. Some clubs don't know that, but it's for just for the novice classes, because it's just it helps the children that don't get ribbons to get a ribbon.
That's a great idea.
So there you go. Some more good positive ideas.
Going back to bringing up the future, all of you obviously started somewhere. Obviously, all started as breeders and are breeders. How do we take not only the young generation, but just the newcomer in general, and encourage them to stay? When I was a kid, we stayed all day, win, lose, or draw. Now, as we all know, if you don't go winner's dog, you're gone before your own breed is over. How do we encourage these people to stay beyond what I call our five-year cycle? They come in, they stay 5 years, they think they know everything, they have a difficult litter or a difficult breeding, and then they're gone. Or somebody hurts their feeling ringside, and then they're gone. How do we encourage those people to stay and become the next generation of senior breeders?
I think that could go to everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
To any breeder in the room.
Anybody out here that has some ideas. Guys, you got anything?
I think that's the magic
potion. It is the magic potion.
That's nothing new, though. That problem has existed in this sport ever since I've been involved. Because I remember when I used to write for the Gazette, I wrote an article about that years and years ago, that you could watch people after they didn't go winner's dog walk away from the ring.
But I think it's gotten worse in recent years. Wouldn't you agree?
I don't think it has.
I'm not sure that it has. I just think that's an ongoing problem. I think a lot of that probably has to do with fellow breeders, nurturing fellow breeders. As a judge, there's nothing we can do short of handcuffing people to their chairs.
Well, not so much from a judge's point of view, but as a breeder, as those fellow people standing ringside, to me, I see a lot of coldness of people getting upset or mad at the newbies rather than taking them aside and being willing to help them.
You know, when I first started, I remember my mentors, everybody said, you stay, you watch, that's how you
exactly
learn. You watch other breeds.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, you go watch the judge before you go in the ring.
Like Jody makes her kids do.
Yeah, you stay and you stay all day long.
Exactly.
And you
exactly
learn and you ask questions, and that's how I learn.
I think it goes back to the breeders mentoring their puppy buyers. Mm-hmm. We're not encouraging our puppy buyers and showing them the good parts. Right. We're showing them the drama, the, oh my God, that dog's a piece of caca and my dog's better. We've all seen it. And we have to take our puppy buyers, just like we have to take our juniors, by the hand, spend a little bit extra time, and oh, you want to go have lunch? Too bad. If you're going to be a breeder, you're going to be an educator.
We have a small group, for one thing, Clumber Spaniel. And as Clumber Spaniel people, we like food. Okay? So most of the time when they're in the area where we know there's a lot of Clumbers, potlucks. And everybody will come to a potluck.
Wine.
But we don't announce.
I knew how to do that.
And we bring pet people come out to watch their friends show their dogs. We have a large group of people and very supportive of one another.
23
Yeah, we have quite a few come out, and even if they're not showing, they come out. As a breeder, that's what I promote, and we're not judging people, we're not judging dogs. And there is not a bad Clumber there, ever. They all have their own way of life. And what I suggest is, like I said, potluck. And get in a group, get on Facebook, announce that we're going to have a group of people, and right after the plumbers are shown, come over to my setup, and that's usually everybody comes around, and we have a good time just sitting there talking and eating.
What's for dinner tonight?
We all know we're going to lunch.
Okay. Exactly. All right, you guys, plumbers! Plumber people. Okay, Catelyn's got a question. This one's got a question. I don't know this young man. I'm sorry. So we got at least a couple more questions. Here you go.
So I actually don't have a question. I have a statement. But I started a confirmation just over a year ago. I only did it because it was in my contract with my breeder. I had no desire to do confirmation. I knew nothing about it. I begged my breeder for the puppy that I got, and I said, I'll do anything. Just tell me what I need to do to get this puppy. And she's like, you need to finish him. I'm like, okay. What does that mean? And I was very fortunate enough to have, and I still do, I have a breeder who checks in on me at every show. I have a breeder who wants to know updates. I have a breeder who lives across the country, but encouraged me and helped me find a handling class, helped me find local mentors in the breed. And I don't know if it's the luck of the draw or whatever, but I've been very fortunate in the last year to meet many, many people in my breed, outside of my breed, handlers that I apprenticed for, handlers that I've helped dogs run inside for, and after finishing my dog, I'm still doing it. I think for me, the support with other handlers, people I don't know, encouragement, criticism, and as a person being able to take criticism and know what I can do differently or what I shouldn't have done or what was a really dumb idea. But what I could do differently to showcase my dog better, to showcase somebody else's dog better for me, and the reason why I think I continue to do it is because maybe I'm a little bit crazy.
We all are.
But the support that I've received from judges, constructive criticism from judges, from other handlers, from other exhibitors in my breed, and that support is what, for me at least, why I continue to show.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, here we go. I'm working my way to you, Callan.
I have a comment, and my comment is about breeders and support, so that all this works together. And Pee-wee's at our English Springer Spaniel National. We have a very active Pee-wee group, and we have a person who is a wonderful mentor in our breed, Lauren Howard, and she always encourages Pee-wees to come out. What was especially wonderful this year is Peyton, you might know that name, is a very well-known English Springer Spaniel. Some of you might know him by Winmore Champagne Supernova. He was with a little six-year-old girl named Evelyn. And there is a photograph going in the Springer publication with this little girl and the smile on her face with a very obviously well-trained dog going around the ring. But she was just absolutely aglow. So that tells you how wonderful these mentoring programs are for the Pee-wees and how wonderful the breeders and owners of these retired show dogs are in sharing their knowledge and their dogs with these young children. So I think there are certain groups and certain breeds that probably tend to do that more. My other comment was about being a breeder and mentoring the owners of your puppies. I know I always try to do that, and my mentors have been the breeders of my foundation bench. So it's as if that mentoring continues. But by the same token, even though I've been breeding for quite a number of years now myself, I always think that there is something that I can learn, and I can always also be mentored by other people who have been in the breed either longer or have information to share with me. So it's a two-way street. You have to be open to sharing knowledge, and you have to be open to receiving knowledge.
Absolutely.
Excellent, excellent commentary. Catelyn, I'm coming. I'm wending my way to the back corner. Here we go.
Often late, what do you expect?
So, as a younger generation, I started as a breeder owner handler first, and then became a handler. I find in my generation, we don't have breeders coming up, unfortunately. I only do this because I am a second generation. My mom is my backbone on becoming the breeder I continue to be. But how do we promote my generation to pick up the pieces of everyone else? because sometimes they're just the flavor of the month, what's being advertised. You know, they're not researching. They're just saying, oh my gosh, that dog is perfect. I need to breed to that. So how do we encourage my generation to follow the standard, continue health clearances, because that is something also not really touched in several bases. As handlers, they don't care. You know, I'm a breeder first, those matters care. So that's kind of where I'm kind of looking around in my generation saying, who's gonna come with me through the bridge of keeping our sport alive? Because once everyone else is gone, what's gonna be left is the flavor of the month.
Well, we hope not the flavor of the month, but I think Catlin makes a great point. And do you guys have any additional input on this? Any other ideas that we can reach to the generation that follows me and follows Catlin even?
So, Catlin, you hear what other people in your bracket, the dialogue, what do you have to say about that?
Winning's everything.
Okay, so maybe the thing is to encourage
winning everything. My generation, they win with the things they think they've bred, but it's all about the ribbons.
So I do think that what all of us here can do is encourage the person next to us, give them ideas, give them suggestions. Catlin, there's people next to you. I got young people here. Look at this one running my camera. Shout out, sister. Okay, there's people here. And you can help them understand that the ribbon isn't everything. And Cindy, I would like you to make a tiny little pitch from Canine Health Foundation about how the ribbon really isn't everything.
Do I have my fundraising hat on? Which
hat? Put a hat, honey.
I've been very involved with the Canine Health Foundation, and I will say that we get tremendous support from the breed clubs. It's through the breed clubs that we find out what the problems are, and it's also through the breed clubs that we help to find the dogs to do the research, because the nice thing about the Canine Health Foundation is that we have very stringent care and conditions about the dogs that are used in research. So basically they are breeders and own dogs, pet dogs that are presented at universities, but we do not allow the use of any colony dogs in our research. As far as the health of purebred dogs, that could be a discussion that far exceeds the time that we have here. And I do have, believe it or not, an opinion on that too.
I can't imagine.
But it's a wonderful organization. It is the largest funder of solely of canine research in the world. And it is part of the American Kennel Club. And it's a very worthwhile organization. It's 25 years old now, and it has at its helm presently chief science officer, is also our CEO. She's a DVM PhD, a brilliant lady who also has the ability to talk the talk. She's very personable. She just came back from the Rhodesian National. She's an excellent speaker, and her name is Diane Brown, and our offices are in Raleigh.
And clubs can encourage her to come and speak, yeah?
Yes, and one problem is that a lot of clubs, kind of like will take the lead, different hat that I wear, where they say, oh, well, you know, please come and speak at our meeting, or please come and man a booth. Well, taking the lead is totally volunteer, and so if one of us can do that, that's fine, but knowing that we pay our own way. And likewise with Canine Health Foundation, if you have Dr. Brown come and talk, know that basically you're taking that money away from research. So if you would like, she's a wonderful speaker and very enlightening. If you'd like for her to talk, I would encourage you to pay her way.
Excellent.
So it's not just about winning. There's health involved too. That's an important part. John, do you have anything you'd like to add to this conversation? I think so.
One of the things we need to do, I mean, there's many things, but we need to welcome people to our sport. We need to encourage them to be involved, not only in learning about their own breed, but learning about clubs. We need club members. We need clubs. We've lost a few clubs, and certainly would hate to see that become a trend, but the graying of our sport is apparent. Young people today if they only want to win, there'll be nothing left to win if we don't welcome and get involved in what's going on.
Absolutely, and I think that's a great closing note. I know you guys are starving and need to go eat dinner, so I respectful of the judges' time, respectful of all you. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for participating. These seminars are the type of thing that you can do as a club to help start conversations, offer education, involve exhibitors in more than a drive-by, if you will. Somebody said on one of my podcasts, they come to the dog show, they don't even turn the car off, they go to the show, they leave. Okay, may I encourage everyone out there in Facebook land, there's things to do at the dog show, opportunities to learn. Please come and join us. And hopefully there will be dogs to be shown in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Laura.
I'm just going to say a couple of huge thank you to Laura for bringing this here and for doing this with us tonight. Huge, huge, huge thank you. And to everybody that came, we are the start of the change. And without this happening, nothing changes. Nothing goes forward. Without breeders, we don't have dogs to show. Plain and simple.
Thank you all. Have a wonderful evening.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.